Welcome. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from various sources, and I'm going to start with the next episode from Ursula Le Guin's book, No Time to Spare. This one is from January 2012, and it's about choosing a cat. I have never chosen a cat before. I have been chosen by the cat, or by people who offered us a cat, or a kitten, was weeping up in a tree on Euclid Avenue and needed to be rescued, and grew up into a 14-pound gray tiger, Tom, who populated our neighborhood in Berkeley for blocks around with gray tiger kittens. Or pretty golden Mrs. Tabby, probably after an affair with her handsome golden brother, presented us with several golden kittens, and we kept Laurel and Hardy. Or when Willie died, we asked Dr. Morgan to let us know if anyone left a kitten at the veterinary door the way people do, and she said it wasn't likely because it was long past kitten season. But next morning there was a six-month-old in a tuxedo on her doorstep, and she called us up, and so Zorro came home with us for 13 years. After Zorro died last spring, there had to be the emptiness. Finally, it began to be time that the house had a soul again. Some Frenchman said that the cat is the soul of the house, and we agree. But no cat had chosen us or been offered to us or appeared weeping in a tree. So I asked my daughter if she would come to the Humane Society with me and help me choose a cat. A middle-aged, sedate, homebody cat, suitable for owners in their 80s. Male, for no reason but that the cats I have loved most dearly were males. Black, I hoped, as I like black cats and had read that they are the least popular choice for adoption. But I wasn't particular about details. I was nervous about going. I dreaded it, in fact. How can you choose a cat? And what about the ones I couldn't choose? The Humane Society's Portland office is an amazing place. It is immense, and I saw only the lobby and the cat wing. Rooms and rooms and rooms of cats. There's always somebody, staff and volunteers at hand if you want them. Everything is organized with such simple efficiency that it all seems easygoing and friendly, low stress. When you are one of the huge number of people coming daily to bring in or adopt animals, when you see the endless incoming and outgoing of animals and glimpse the tremendous, endless work involved in receiving and treating and keeping them, the achievement of that easygoing atmosphere seems almost incredible and totally admirable. The human-animal interface is a very troubled one these days, and in one sense, the Humane Society shows that trouble at its most acute. Yet, in here, in everything I saw there, I also saw the best of what human beings can do when they put their heart and mind to it. Well, so we found our way into the cat wing and looked about a bit. And it turned out that at the moment there were very few middle-aged cats for adoption. The ones that were there mostly came from one place, which I had read about recently in the newspaper. A woman with 90 cats who was sure she loved them all and was looking after them, and they were all fine, and you know the story, a sad one. The Humane Society had taken about 60 of them. The nice aide, whom we began to follow around, told us that they weren't in as bad a shape as most animals in those situations and were fairly well socialized, but they weren't in very good shape either and would need special care for quite a while to come. That sounded a bit beyond me. Aside from them, most of the cats there were kittens. Kittening was very late this year, she said. Just like tomatoing, I thought. Or tomatoing. I think it's tomatoing. In one room of 6 or 8 kittens, Caroline noticed an agitated nylon play tube which seemed to contain at least 2 active animals, one black and one white. Eventually, one small cat emerged, very black and white, and pleased with himself. Our guide told us he was older than most of them, a year old, so we asked to see him. We went to the interview room, and she came in with a little fellow in the tuxedo. He seemed very small for a year old, 7 pounds, she said. His tail stood straight up in the air, and he purred most amazingly, and talked a good deal in a rather high voice, and often fell over in a playful appeasement position. He was clearly and naturally anxious. He clung a little to the aide till she left us alone with him. He wasn't really shy, didn't mind being picked up and handled and petted, though he wouldn't settle on a lap. His eyes were bright, his coat sleek and soft, the black tail stood straight up, and the black spot on his left hind leg was terminally cute. The aide came back, and I said, "Okay." She and my daughter were both a little surprised. Maybe I was, too. "You don't want to look at any others," she said. "No, I didn't. Send him back. Look at other cats. Make a choice of one. Maybe not him. I couldn't. Fate or the lord of the animals or whatever had presented me with a cat again." Okay. His previous owner had conscientiously filled out the Humane Society questionnaire. Her answers were useful and heartbreaking. Reading between some of the lines, I learned that he lived his first year with his mother and one sibling in a household where there were children under 3, children from 3 to 9, and children from 9 through 14, but no men. The reason why all 3 cats were given up for adoption was stark: could not afford to keep. He had been only 4 days at the Humane Society. They had neutered him right away, and he was recovering fast. He was in excellent health, had been well fed, well treated, a sociable, friendly, playful, cheerful little pet. I do not like to think of the tears in that family. He has been with us a month today. As his first owner warned, he is somewhat shy of men, but not very, and not afraid of children, though sensibly watchful. We lived 13 years with shy, wary Zorro, who feared many things, including my daughter Caroline. But once she stayed in our house with 2 big, unruly dogs for 10 years, he never forgave her. But this fellow is not timid. In fact, he is perhaps too fearless. He grew up as an inside-outside cat. Here, he won't go outside till the weather gets warm, but then he must. I can only hope he knows what to be afraid of out there. Like many young cats, he goes wild as a buck once or twice a day, flying around the room about 3 feet off the ground, knocking things off and over, getting into all kinds of trouble. Shouts of disapproval are ineffective, little swats on the butt are slightly effective, and he understands and remembers what no and a preventing hand in front of his nose means. But I found to my distress that sometimes a threateningly raised hand will cause him to cringe and crouch like a beaten dog. I don't know what that comes from, but I can't stand it. So shout and swat and no is all I can do. Vonda sent me a whole bucket full of Super Balls, wonderful for soccer, for solo soccer games, and working off excess energy. He's good at all varieties of string game. When he wins at string on a stick, he walks off with the string and the stick and likes to carry the whole thing downstairs, clatter, rattle, bump. He is quite good at paws beneath the door, but hasn't yet got the point of paws between the banisters, because there were no banisters in the house he grew up in. That was clear the first few days when he tried to navigate our stairs, a landform entirely new to him. The learning process was extremely funny and dangerous to us ancients who are unsteady enough on stairs without a confused cat suddenly appearing belly up on the next stair down or darting madly crossways right in front of your foot. But he mastered all of that and now races up and down far ahead of us, barely touching the stairs at all, as to the manner born. They warned us at the Humane Society that there was a feline cold going around, probably from the rescued cats, and he probably had it. There's nothing they can do about it, any more than a kindergarten can. So he brought it home and was a very snuffly little body for 2 weeks. Not a totally bad start, since he wanted to cuddle and sleep a lot, and we could get to know one another quietly. I didn't worry much about him because he had no fever and never for a moment lost his appetite. He had to snort to breathe while he ate, but he ate and ate. Kibbles. Oh, kibbles. Oh, joy. Oh, gourmet delight. Oh, tuna and sushi and chicken liver and caviar all in one. I guess kibbles is all he ever had to eat. So kibbles is food. And he loves food. He just loves it. He certainly won't bother us with his finicky, demanding taste. But it may take strong willpower, ours, to prevent globularity in this cat. We will try. He is pretty, but his only unusual beauty is his eyes, and you have to look closely to realize it. Right around the dark, large pupil, they are green, and around that reddish-yellow. I had seen that magic change in a semi-precious stone. He has eyes of chrysoberyl. Wikipedia tells us that either that or alexandrite is a trichriate gem. It shows emerald green, red, or yellow orange, depending on the angle of the light. While he had the cold and we were lying around together, I tried out names. Alexander was too imperial. Chrysoberyl, far too majestic. Pico was one that seemed to fit him, or Paco, but the one he kept looking around at when I said it was Pard. It started out as Gatto Pardo, the leopard, Lampedusa's Prince Fabrizio. That was too long for anybody his size and got cut down to Pardo, and then turned into Pard as in partner. Hey, little Pard, I hope you choose to stay around for a while. Now let's move on to an article from the AARP magazine, Money Saver. No cash? No problem. Your guide to using the latest electronic payment methods. And this is by Kim Porter. If COVID-19 has made you uncomfortable to have a cashier hand you cash that was recently in someone else's pocket, you have company. In a recent MasterCard study, 82% of respondents worldwide said contactless payments, the industry phrase for transactions done at close quarters without physical contact, were the cleaner way to pay. Contactless payments are perfect for a pandemic, says Matt Schultz, chief credit analyst at LendingTree. The last thing anyone wants to do right now is touch more than we have to. Despite a shift toward electronic transactions, many older Americans still have much to learn about paying without using cash, writing a check, or swiping a card. A recent survey by the credit card website Compare Cards found that most boomers don't know what the wave-like contactless symbol on their card meant. It could be used for ultra-secure tap-and-go payments. Here's a quick rundown on four types of electronic payments and how to use them safely. And the wave-like contactless symbol is a series of arcs that go from small to larger. Here we have digital wallets. Use for shopping in a store that has contactless payment terminals. Digital wallets are electronic versions of your bank and payment accounts that you add to a smartphone app. The major benefit here is convenience. You can summon payment from your phone even if you leave your real wallet at home. Some of the popular digital wallets include Apple Pay, Samsung Pay, and Google Pay. These usually require you to download an app and link your bank account or credit card. In some cases, you can even link gift cards. Then make an in-store payment by checking for the contactless logo and waving your smartphone at the card reader. Digital wallets encrypt your financial details on the app so no one can actually read your card number, and they require authentication before each purchase, like your fingerprint or a scan of your face. These measures prevent others from making a purchase with the digital wallet, even if your phone is stolen. Many merchants, however, don't have card readers that allow for digital wallets or for contactless debit and credit cards. At these stores, your only electronic option is to insert or swipe a card. You can keep it safe by monitoring your bank account or credit card for suspicious transactions and be aware of scams. One example, someone accidentally sends you money and asks you to send it back, but the money you receive came from a stolen credit card, so that transaction will be subsequently canceled. The money you politely returned, however, is gone forever. And just as with transactions that don't use a digital wallet, credit cards come with much stronger protections against unauthorized use than do debit cards. Then there's peer-to-peer payment apps. You can use these for sending money to friends and family. In PayPal, Venmo, and Zelle are among the best known of these apps, which let you send and receive money using a smartphone or other device. They come in handy when you need to split a dinner bill, tip your hairstylist, or send money to a relative. Setting up an account usually involves creating a profile and linking your checking account or credit card. You can start sending money to others right away, though you may need to find them on the app using their phone number, email address, or username. Consumer Reports says peer-to-peer apps are generally safe, but come with inherent risks. For one, it's alarmingly easy to send money to the wrong person, and scammers can trick users into forking over their money or providing financial details. And you usually can't reverse a transaction if you send money to the wrong person. Keep it safe by using the app only with trusted friends and family, not for transactions with strangers. Also, implement any security measures the app offers. For example, setting up a PIN you'll have to enter each time you open Venmo. Then there's contactless debit and credit cards. You can use them for shopping in a store that has contactless payment terminals. If your card has the contactless symbol, look for it on the card reader at checkout. To pay, tap the card on the terminal or just hold it close. The process is significantly safer than swiping your card, Schultz says. Every contactless transaction creates a one-time security code which guards your payment information. Cracking that code would essentially reveal an outdated password. Keep it safe by regularly checking your card activity and quickly reporting fraud to your card issuer. Transaction data is extremely hard to hack into, but checking your statements is still good practice. ACH transfers, use for paying your recurring bills. The Automated Clearinghouse is a secure network that moves electronic payments between bank accounts. Using ACH transfers, you can move money out of your bank account to pay a bill or receive it, such as direct deposit Social Security benefits. Dollar for dollar, ACH payments have the lowest fraud rate of any transaction method in the U.S., and of course, they're touch-free. Setting up automatic mortgage and utility payments or any other recurring bill is one popular way to use these payments. You head to the relevant payee's website, log into your account, and provide your checking account and routing numbers. When the bill is due, your service provider automatically withdraws funds for payment. Keep it safe by protecting your bank account numbers. Only give them to companies you trust. Don't share them over the phone or by email. And to avoid entering your account information on fake company sites, Don't visit them via links and emails you receive. Type in a company's correct web address yourself. Now we have four tips, four times to pay with paper. People use cash 26% of the time, says the Federal Reserve. Here's why you might want to or have to use greenbacks. Now, last time we talked about you're pinching pennies. And now let's talk about you don't have any plastic. The Fed also found that 6% of U.S. adults lacked bank accounts necessary for certain contactless payments. Another 17% don't have a credit card. Consumer groups want businesses to keep cash options available for these unbanked and underbanked populations. You think risks are overblown. COVID-19 spreads mainly through the air. Health organizations haven't named cash an especially risky transmitter. Still, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention recommend using contactless payments and washing your hands after touching currency. And finally, you patronize small businesses. Processing fees added to credit and debit card transactions can increase costs for retailers, eating up as much as 3.5% of what a customer pays. So using cash at your favorite farm stands and mom-and-pop shops, if they allow it, can help the merchants make a little more money. Now we're going to move on to an article that I've found in Good News Network. It's about the simple habit of flossing reduces your risk of COVID-19 complications, says a new study. If there were ever a universal human skill beyond things like running, jumping, and solving problems, it would be the excellent capacity humans display for ignoring good dental hygiene. Brushing and flossing after every meal is a difficult habit to build in kids, and one that's joyously forgotten among many adults. But it's not just gum disease to many other diseases like diabetes and cardiovascular disease, as well as increases in COVID-19 mortality. Poor oral hygiene can lead to gingivitis, a gum disease which, if ignored, can become the more severe periodontitis. The latter was found in a study by the European Federation of Periodontology to affect half of all British adults and by the CDC to affect about the same number of American adults. The Journal of Periodontology found that people with COVID-19 and gum disease had a 900% greater chance of dying from the virus, while also being 350% more likely to be hospitalized. While the two phenomena seem completely unrelated, the correlation is simply the result of chronic inflammation, spurred on by diseased gums, exacerbating the inflammatory response. This knock-on effect is quite common in pathology, with some inflammatory responses like interleukin, IL, and tumor necrosis factor, TNF, being correspondingly found in nearly every disease known to man. IL-6 is a principal factor in COVID-19 mortality, for example. The cause is simply the function that different immune agents have on our body. One of the leading inducers of death in COVID-19 afflicted patients is the much-discussed cytokine storm, referring to inflammatory cytokines, a type of immune cell targeting our own tissues with such fury that they cannot survive. Fortunately, regular brushing and flossing, which in terms of healthy habits is much easier to do than cutting sugar out of your diet or spending 150 minutes a week in intense exercise, is often all that's required to prevent gum disease. Furthermore, periodontitis is completely reversible through good oral hygiene practices of brushing, flossing, and mouthwash daily. The COVID study is another pointer to the fact that you need to have a healthy mouth for overall health, Nicola West, the Secretary General of the European Federation of Parodontology, told the Times of London. The mouth is a window on the body. Bacteria in the mouth get into the bloodstream where they can harm the rest of the body. This explains why gum disease has been linked with diabetes, cardiovascular disease, and dementia. Yes, you did in fact read dementia. A study conducted by West found that bacteria prevalent in patients with periodontitis were also present in the brains of patients who died from Alzheimer's disease. This is because, West writes, gum disease bacteria can cross the blood-brain barrier, especially later in life when our immune systems are weaker and our risk for gum disease grows higher. In short, there's never been a better time to start improving your oral hygiene routine. A beautiful smile apparently reflects beautiful health after all. Now we have time for just a few comments from Felicia Richard, and this is from a December AARP magazine. 1. Get quiet. I've been a student of yoga meditation for 40 years, but I find it especially nourishing now, offering up a greater appreciation for the little things. Eat what you want. When the pandemic started, I ate kale, collard greens, and green beans almost every day. Then I changed it up to coconut milk ice cream, gluten-free pie, and this great rye bread I would use for my avocado toast. Yes, I did that. 3. Be woke. If we could just lean back and see how we created these hurtful inequities in the world, we would ask, do we really want to continue being this way? 4. Zoom on. I've disparaged technology, but it allows me to do so much more now, like have virtual talks with students and record Shakespeare for radio instead of performing it in the park. Who knew? 5. Reconsider nature. Everything, birds, forests, air, is just happier today without all of our human activity. I've been honoring that by not driving unless I must and using less water and energy. Reimagine life. Before all this, I went about my business with a kind of certainty about what is, how it ought to be. The truth is, I don't know what's to come. I don't even understand everything that's here. Well, folks, we've run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.